From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, several episodes ago, we talked about little loops, little magnetic loops.
Yep, we did.
But now we're going to talk about the big loops. They've always been legendary antennas, in a sense. A lot of magic surrounding them.
Well, they can be pretty magical in a number of different ways. I mean, they are a whole different antenna from the small loop. For one thing, they radiate in different directions. The small loop radiates in the plane of the loop, whereas the big loop, full-wave loop, prefers radiating perpendicular to the loop. So that's a whole mindset to change right there. And the little loop, we talked about a lot about its disadvantages, including the fact that it had a typically very low feed impedance that was hard to drive power into without lots of losses. It has typically a very narrow bandwidth requiring tuning at the antenna, typically often with motorized controls and so forth to make it work. And the bandwidth is still, without retuning, typically, depending on the size, 10 or 20 kilohertz at most. In fact, some loops can be so narrow in bandwidth that they can't take a full AM signal without clipping off the sidebands.
That's right.
But a full-wave loop is almost the opposite. It has a higher feed impedance than a dipole. It has a wider bandwidth than a dipole. It's also less fussy than a lot of antennas. The typical full-wave antenna, they can be used in a number of different ways, and it probably makes sense to talk about them separately. In both cases, or both of the major categories, they can be hung from trees, but in one case, they hang in the vertical plane in an antenna that we would call a one-element cubicle quad, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Quad beam is made of full-wave loops, essentially.
That's right.
And the driven element is a single full-wave loop, and it works very well in that environment. If you look at it carefully, you can see, I think, if you feed it from the bottom, and you can put that up two different ways. One as a, we call a square loop, typically fed from the bottom, the center of the bottom wire, or as a diamond-shaped loop with corners pointing up and down and fed typically from the bottom corner. And that both of those are equivalent electrically. Some people think that ice will fall off the diamond wires more easily than off the horizontal ones. And people have all sorts of different ideas about which one is better. I think they're essentially equivalent. Perhaps there are some slight differences. With the loop in that orientation, the radiation tends to be perpendicular to the loop, so it's going out towards the horizon if it's high enough. And that's one of the issues with a loop like this. It's really like two half-wave dipoles. If we go back to the square one, it's easier to visualize. It's two half-wave dipoles, a quarter wave above the other, the bottom one fed, and the ends of the two dipoles connected together on the vertical pieces of the dipole. Draw yourself a sketch if that doesn't... This is where
I'm doing it in my mind,
yeah.
Yes.
A blackboard would be helpful here. But anyway, so if you can picture it, you've got a half-wave dipole on the bottom with its ends bent up, another half-wave dipole on the top with its ends bent down, so the ends meet. That makes a square, quarter wave apart. And that ends up driving the upper dipole in phase with the lower one, because both the ends are at a high impedance point and the so forth. So it's really a two-element stacked array with fairly close spacing. So in free space, it actually has gain. It has a gain of a little less than 2 decibels, typically 1.7 dB in free space over a single dipole. That's the good news. The bad news is that array center is in the middle of this thing. So it actually acts as if it were lower than the top wire. So if you have a fairly low loop oriented in this way, it actually comes out lower than if you had made a dipole out of the top wire bent down, which would take the same space, mm-hmm. more or less. I mean, the coax would be longer and so forth. And actually it has about the same gain, but it has, because of the ground reflection and so forth, that it doesn't really get the benefit of the gain over a dipole at low angles.
When you say low, how low is low?
Well, you think about it. Typically, you want to have a horizontal antenna that, for low-angle radiation, to be at least half a wavelength high, and higher is better, perhaps up to a wavelength. So between half a wave and a full wave is sort of optimum for a HF horizontal antenna, which the this loop would be. What that means is you want the center of it to be about that high. Well, that means the top wire has got to be an eighth of a wavelength higher than the center. So some people used to say that quads worked well if they were close to the ground compared to Yagis. And they may be easier to feed, and there may be other things going on, but the radiation angle is equivalent to the middle of the quad, so that it would be comparable to a dipole at the center height. Now, actually, that typically works out about even, because if you think about it, if you mount a quad on a tower, the center of it usually is at the top of the tower. If you mount a Yagi on the same tower, its height is at about the top of the tower. So
yes,
it's more or less equivalent in that regard. But for 20 meters, for example, you want to have the center of the loop at least 35 or 40 or 45 feet. And until you get up to those, the higher heights there, you don't really get the benefit of the gain. You still have the other benefits, you know, the easy to feed, the wide bandwidth, and the relatively high impedance, meaning less loss in the connections and so forth. So, and that particularly all makes a lot of sense when you do combine it into a multi-element array. Like a typical two-element quad has typically the gain of a three-element Yagi. And, of course, a two-element quad, in a way, is a four-element antenna, because each of the loops is really two dipoles.
Yes.
So you'd expect that. But what's nice about the quad is, unlike the Yagi, which is very fussy about tuning, and typically if you don't do something about matching to it, it has a impedance of perhaps 20 ohms or something to deal with, which results in losses, and the tuning is very critical. The quad doesn't seem to share those qualities. You have much less critical tuning. The impedance is about 100 ohms, so that's very easy to feed with a quarter-wave matching section of 75-ohm coax and then 50-ohm coax the rest of the way to the station. And it's an easy antenna to duplicate. It's also relatively inexpensive. It's lightweight because it's made of wire instead of tubing. People used to make them out of with bamboo rug poles as spreaders, which are essentially free. And, of course, fiberglass lasts longer, but it's probably heavier and certainly more expensive.
Now, in the case of the loops that you've been talking about, they've been vertical in their
vertical
orientation.
Plane, yes.
What about horizontal loops? Do they perform any differently?
They do. And that's where it's interesting. The vertical loop is pretty much a one-band affair. You can actually put power into it on the harmonics without too much problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't go at low angles particularly. It'll tend to go upwards. The horizontal plane loop on its fundamental, where it's a full wave in circumference, will still be perpendicular to the loop, which means it's going to radiate upwards.
Right.
By and large, which, you know, for an 80-meter loop is great for NVIS coverage for medium range, high angle.
A cloud warmer, as they
call it.
A cloud
warmer,
yes.
But a cloud warmer has gotten a lot more cred over the last few years because of this near vertical incident sky wave, which provides very reliable coverage over a medium-sized area, maybe
yes,
out to 1,000 miles, depending on conditions and so forth. And typically, it's 80 and 40 meters are the bands for that, and this does a wonderful job for that. So they're very popular in that environment. But the difference now is on the other bands, on the higher bands, the radiation that would be upwards in a vertical loop is now outwards from the horizontal loop. It's not going to be exactly a rhombic,
no,
which is a very nice high-gain traveling wave antenna that's very effective. But it's close in many regards. You will have, for the first few harmonics, a very intense beam going, particularly if you feed it from a corner, the primary radiation on the second and fourth or third and fourth harmonics is a beam going in the direction from the feed point to the far corner. And it has gain, you know, typically of a three-element Yagi or something in that direction. Plus or minus that, unlike a Yagi, which is a single beam, the dimensions and the angles of the square loop are not rhombic-like, they don't cancel out the unwanted thing. So you actually get a beam to the rear that's only a few dB down from the one in the front, and you get radiation to the sides that's down a little more. And depending on the band, there'll be multiple lobes and so forth on the sides. But, you know, maybe that's good. If you only have one antenna, you can talk in different directions, and you'll get gain in each one of these lobes compared to a dipole. Of course, you get a lot of nulls also.
But, yes, that's true.
And you know, the nice thing is, I guess, if there's a null, you won't hear people there, and they won't hear you. So you don't know it's not working to places you can't hear people. But where you can hear people, it works very well. So if you point this from the East Coast towards Central Europe or something, you get a very nice response.
So like ignorance is bliss or something to
well,
that effect.
Yeah, there are people who say, you know, you can't work them if you can't hear them. And, but the good news is if you can't hear them, you don't know that you're not working them either. So,
well, Joe, let's take a break, hear okay. from DX Engineering, and we'll be back.
All right.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel.
Always nice to be here.
Yes. I have a question about loops. So far, we've been talking about loops primarily devoted to one frequency. Is it practical, really, to perhaps use a single loop on multiple bands, maybe feed it with an antenna tuner, something of that nature?
Absolutely, but particularly the loop oriented in a horizontal fashion. Because as I say, on the harmonics, it acts very much like a beam with multiple mm-hmm. beams, but it still has a lot of gain in its favored directions, and it changes slightly with depending on which harmonic. The impedance doesn't vary quite as fast as some of the other kinds of antennas, but particularly on the bands that are not harmonically related, you definitely want to feed it with, say, window line and a tuner. On the second harmonic and fourth harmonic, it's not that bad to use coax, but it's not 1-to-1. It might be 2 or 3-to-1
mm-hmm.
on some bands. But on bands where it's not harmonically related, you're definitely going to need to use a low-loss balanced line and a tuner in the radio end or something. It's a very practical multi-band antenna, and that's one of the reasons people like it. But best fed with window line, particularly on the harmonics. Where, you know, on the fundamental, it feeds fine with coax and a matching section. And even if you don't use a matching section on 75, 80 meters, the SWR is not so high, you'll have a lot of loss with good coax if it's a reasonable length. But definitely if you're using it as a multi-band antenna, a tuner is much better. I mean, you can probably feed it with coax and it'll probably work, but you'd probably be wasting a lot of power in the coax itself.
What about delta loops? Again, I know I'm jumping all over the place
here. Well,
it's
really the same kind of antenna. We didn't mention it in the discussion of vertical plane antennas, but they're also useful. Delta triangular loops are useful in the vertical plane also.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're very convenient to make because you can support it with two halyards and trees.
That's right.
Take the top wire and bring the downward facing wires to a point at the bottom where you can feed it. And that actually moves the center of radiation a little further up the antenna, which is to the good. It avoids the, you could always hang a dipole with hanging ends on the same two halyards, but by having the feed at the bottom, you avoid the sag that you get in a dipole from the transmission line in the middle, which is a benefit. And, of course, you need less transmission line because, in a sense, the two sides act like the part of the transmission line in a way. So that's a very popular arrangement, and people make beams out of those as well. I guess the advantage of those in a beam is that they tend to be self-supporting. You don't need the spreaders that you need for a typical quad because the two vertical going arms of the triangle serve as the support for the wire, which can be just a wire between them if it's connected well.
Well, now, what about the length of the loop itself? How critical is that, especially if you're feeding it with a tuner, obviously? I mean, you're counting on the tuner to deal with the impedance variations, but I mean, does it have to be, for example, one full wavelength of wire or just as much wire as I can put up?
Well, that's a good point. The pattern is slightly different, particularly with the horizontal loop. The pattern is nice and clean on the harmonics if it's even or it's a multiple of the wavelength. On the bands that is not a multiple of the wavelength, which with all of our bands now, it's very hard to do. The pattern is a little more uneven. So you get a little better pattern on the primary frequencies if it's resonant. But it doesn't have to be. It'll work just fine. The gain is going to be similar. What happens if it's not exactly resonant is maybe a good thing. Those nulls we talked about on the multiple frequency arrangements become less deep. So you have, you know, a little less gain, but a little less deep null. So maybe you can work at some of those people. Maybe you won't work them, but you'll hear them, and you know you're missing out. So that works fine. It's not particularly critical. It'll radiate just fine. So it just comes down to the question of feeding it. And I guess that, you know, think about a 75, 80-meter loop. If you have a half-wave dipole on 80 meters, it can typically feed with a 2-to-1 SWR over about 150 kilohertz. So you really need at least three of them to cover the band completely without having a high SWR. The loop has, I forget the numbers, but when I looked at it, I think the bandwidth is closer to twice that. So it'll actually cover a wider range and have the characteristics you want impedance-wise than a dipole. So it has a lot of benefits.
So for someone like me with limited space, and I have one pine tree that's about 40 feet tall, would a loop be potentially a good solution for me? Again, thinking multiband here. If I fed it with an antenna tuner, whether it's horizontal or vertical, I put up as much wire as I can, feed it with the tuner. I mean,
well, that's certainly a viable approach. Many people have done it. The nice thing about having a single support is the two lower corners then are secured at ground or near ground level with a peg in the ground. The problem is if you feed it from the bottom, which you probably would want to do, unlike the loop with the horizontal portion at the top, the center of the radiation is instead of being in the middle of the loop, is down sort of a third of the way up. You know, it's like a low dipole, but since you only have one support, you can't put up a dipole anyway. You could put up an inverted V, and that would be another choice. And actually, that takes the same kinds of things. It takes two tent pegs at the bottom and so
forth.
That's
right.
The thing about the loop is it would be each of the sides of it would make a, think about this, be two-thirds of a wavelength. So actually the dipole, a dipole could be on a lower frequency and fit in the same place. So I guess my inclination would be to go with a inverted V from that same single support. Now, of course, the advantage of the loop, again, is the transmission line is down near the ground level. So which is a plus.
That was one thing I was thinking of, in fact.
So, you know, it'll work. It'll be higher, slightly higher radiation angle than the inverted V because the inverted V center of radiation is about a third of the way down from the top. The loop with the apex at the top is a third of the way up from the bottom. Now, there's another thing you can do with a loop. Here's an interesting thing we didn't talk about on the vertical loop, vertically oriented loop. With a low antenna like that, you can feed it from a corner, and you will end up with a vertically polarized signal that wants to go in the direction away from that corner.
Oh.
And it'll act like, say, similar to a quarter wave monopole, but you don't have to have radios.
Okay.
Of course, you've got four quarter waves of wire making this happen because it's a full wave, but maybe that's easier than digging up the ground or especially if you have rocky soil, it doesn't like
radials. Absolutely, yeah.
So that's another thing people have done. It makes a good DX antenna in comparison to a ground plane or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's relatively easy to erect. I'm not sure how good I'd have to look at it again to see how good it is on harmonics, but certainly on the fundamental and maybe on a few bands above that, it will have good low-angle radiation. And it tends to be unidirectional in the direction away from the feed.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No.
Well, Thomas, KJ9P, asks, can the quarter-wave matching section used to feed a full-wave loop antenna be coiled up and also used as a common mode choke? If so, will there be any change in the design of the matching section? That's a good point, because I often end up with a lot of coax laying around, and that has occurred to me. Why don't I just make this into a common mode choke? What do you think?
Well, absolutely. That's a perfect application for that. And what's nice about it is, because, as we said in the discussion about the loops, typically a piece of 75-ohm coax quarter wave electrical wavelength long, which of course will be shorter than that. It'll be roughly two-thirds that length if it's standard coax, and roughly 80% of that length if it's foam coax, can be made into a common mode choke. There are a couple of ways of doing that, of course. Actually, three ways that I can think of right offhand. Sure, there are more. One way is just take a piece of 6-inch PVC tubing and wrap that section of coax around the tubing as far as you can, and that will provide an inductive air-wound choke that will be fairly effective. There's actually an optimum number of turns depending on the band, and the ARL antenna book has a very nice section on the impedance of that kind of a structure based on the number of turns and the diameter that you can sort of decide which band it'll work best for your antenna. But, you know, it almost doesn't, anything you can do is better than not having a common mode choke.
Yes.
So that's pretty straightforward. The next way is to get a whole bunch of ferrite beads, typically mix 43 or 61 work well. Put them on the coax close to the feed point of the antenna. And how many do you need? Well, the inductance or the impedance goes up linearly with the number of beads. So, twice as many beads gets you twice as much impedance. W2DU developed that choke many years ago, and it usually carries his call with it. And that is very nice, especially for use with foam dielectric coax, because the foam dielectric coax does not like to be wound tightly.
That's right.
Because the inner conductor will migrate through the foam and
it can
short out.
Yep.
And that can work well. The other choice, if you use standard type coax, such as RG59 with a solid polyethylene dielectric, you can wind that fairly tightly around a toroid core. What's nice about that is the impedance goes up with the square of the number of turns.
Mm.
So while the beads go up linearly, Walt Maxwell's first W1DU's first W2DU's first writing of that I saw used 30 beads. You can probably get similar impedance with a far fewer number of turns on a toroid core. It also takes up less space, so I guess the beads make the coax look like it's thicker and not as flexible, whereas the toroid core makes it kind of a lump, and it depends on whether you need more length or you need more, whatever you like. They'll all work fine. I'm sure there are optimum dimensions and so forth of each, but will it affect the coax or the antenna dimensions? No. The signal going to the antenna goes on the inside of the coax, and it doesn't really know that all this is going on the outside of it because it's shielded. That's the idea. So if you keep the signal inside the coax where you want it, and that's what the common mode choke does, then the signal going to the antenna is not impacted at all. So it acts just as if it were a straight length of coax. But the choking keeps the signal on the antenna instead of coming down the shield of the coax. So mm-hmm. It's a wonderful idea and a good way to do it. And the nice thing about it is you have to have connectors anyway for that section of coax, so you can make that separately in the basement and have it all ready to go and pop it on when you're ready to put the antenna up.
Well, that would be handy.
Yeah, and typically you use a PL258 barrel connector to interconnect the coax, the two pieces.
And then away you go.
Indeed.
Well, thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.